You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I'm an analyst for Pro Football Focus, and I write about the Chicago Bears for NBC Sports Chicago and Bears Wire. I'm here to bring you your daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. And today it is Mock Draft Monday. So we're going to be turning our attention, of course, to the upcoming NFL Draft. And we're going to go back to the running back position once more here because as free agency has gone along, the Bears continued to schedule these workouts and visits with running back prospects in the draft. So that's where I want to start, looking at the names that the Bears have already been connected to here and kind of look at how their skill set fits with what Matt Nagy might be looking for at the running back position. Then I'm going to turn our attention to Jordan Howard because I've got a little bit of a bone to pick with the Jordan Howard narrative that I'm getting a little bit tired of. And I want to push back a little bit on sort of the groupthink and the popular opinion that I don't think gets challenged enough. And then we'll wrap up with kind of a similar thing, but changing topics a little bit here, to the Bryce Callahan versus Buster Skrine situation once more. The contract details came out for what Callahan got, and boy, it really makes me question the thought process and the decision process behind how free agency played out. So that's where we'll wrap up. We're kind of hitting a little bit of a range of topics here, but we start with Mock Draft Monday and these Bears running back prospects. And I feel like we have been talking a little bit more about the running back position than others when it comes to the draft. I promise we will be getting more in depth on the rest of the draft class positions. In fact, next week, Monday, we're already planning on having one Benjamin Solak from the Draft Network join us to talk about safety prospects in the draft, so you can look forward to that as well. But I want to start with these running backs because it's clear that the Bears are doing a lot of homework at this position. They have six players that I've counted so far that they are scheduled to have these official pre-draft visits with. You only get 30 of them, and they're using 20% of them on this one running back position. And they're all running backs that are going to be generally around the spectrum of the Bears draft range. The names we've got are Miles Sanders from Penn State, Devin Singletary from Florida Atlantic, James Williams from Washington State, Travion Williams from Texas A&M, Ryquell Armstead from Temple, and Mike Weber from The Ohio State University. So I want to get into all six of those guys for just kind of a brief overview here of what these prospects can bring and why the Bears might be looking at them. But I think it's important to put a little bit of context on what the Chicago Bears are looking for at the running back position. So let's start with going back to Matt Nagy's press conference at the NFL Combine, just briefly here, when he was asked what the Bears look for in the running back position.
Well, when you're dealing with running backs, for us in this offense, you want to be able to have a guy that has really good vision, you know, that can make guys miss. And at the same time, there's that balance of being a hybrid of being able to make things happen in the pass game too, but yet to where you're not one-dimensional. And that's not easy. There's a lot of backs in this draft right now that are one-dimensional. There's some that are hybrids, and there's some that are really just scat guys. So to me, that's fun. I like watching the film and seeing where guys are at, and that's for every position. So it'll be fun to just kind of critique all these positions that we have here offensively and defensively and make sure that with the few picks that we have, we make the most of it.
So the top traits Matt Nagy identified there, vision, being able to make guys miss, and then kind of having that balance of being hybrid, you know, contributing in the passing game and rushing and not just being one-dimensional. So when we run those six running backs kind of through that filter generally, not saying it eliminates running backs that don't fit that, but clearly Matt Nagy highlights those things as the top traits to watch out for. You look at a guy like Miles Sanders from Penn State, about as well-rounded as they come in this draft, a player that might be gone by the Bears picks, but if they really fall in love with him and he starts to fall, I mean, maybe he could be a guy they consider trading up for. I mean, he is a fluid athlete, and you look at the Matt Nagy characteristics. From a vision standpoint, sometimes it's hit and miss, and it'll depend on what game you watch. And part of the problem was such a poor offensive line sometimes made it hard for him to have great vision, because what he's seeing changes quickly and his eyes can deceive him based on where it looks like his bad offensive line is struggling. So there's some give and take there with his vision that's a little bit more of a projection at times. But he's plenty fluid and elusive as far as making guys miss. Certainly has that balance and not one-dimensional in any way, shape, or form as a receiver. So Miles Sanders, for the most part, checks all the boxes there as what Matt Nagy would want in a running back. The bigger issue would be having him still be on the board when the Bears pick. Now, Devin Singletary from FAU, on the other hand, much, much more likely to be there when the Bears pick. And he really does have some elite vision as a runner, and among the best in this draft class at forcing missed tackles, making guys miss along the way. So you can check those two right off the bat. But Singletary was not used in the passing game much at all. So as a receiver, you're looking at a pure projection there based off of his traits, and he's not a guy that has elite speed or overall explosiveness. I mean, he like I said, he's got good vision and can make guys miss that way, but he's not running and breaking away down the field for huge explosive plays all the time. So as a receiver, there's some questions about just how dynamic he can be in that area. So checks all the boxes as a runner, leaves you still wondering as a receiver. Maybe the opposite is true for James Williams from Washington State. Might be the best receiving running back in this class. And personally, I see him as a pretty capable runner, but I think other people in the draft community have more questions about his vision than I do. But he forces plenty of missed tackles up there with the best of them. And I see his vision a little bit like Tariq Cohen, in the sense that sometimes he sees space and goes for it, trying to make the big play, and he gets excited by those opportunities. But I see a guy with the requisite vision to still hit the holes and work within the scheme. And I think if that space isn't there in the NFL, he'll just take what's going to be there for him from a blocking standpoint. And he can't run into space if that space isn't there. So that's why I feel like it's not as big of a concern when you talk about translating it to the next level. So I would absolutely see James Williams as a good fit for what Matt Nagy wants in his offense. And he's going to be there fourth round, fifth round, maybe. That might be a little bit low for him, but we'll see how this running back class shapes out. I mentioned him before on this podcast, but keep an eye on James Williams, because the Bears certainly are keeping an eye on him. Another Williams that they've brought in for a visit, or are bringing in for a visit, Travion Williams from Texas A&M. And personally, I'm not a big fan of his game, so I don't want that to make me come off as biased against him. What I see on the tape is a guy that really kind of lacks that top-notch vision of some of these other guys. He can make some guys miss. He's okay as far as missed tackles go. He's an okay receiver. It's not something he did a ton of, but he can do a little bit of damage there. But he just doesn't necessarily wow me. You know, for a guy who's 5'9", 200 pounds, I just don't see that great decision making, and you know, he could be more elusive, he could be more agile. He leaves me wanting a little bit in a lot of different ways, and I don't know what he is truly, truly great at this point. So I'm a little bit more on the pass on Travion Williams, but the Bears are trying to see what exactly he can do. That's why they bring him in. I don't quite see him as a fit for those traits Matt Nagy identified. Same with Ryquell Armstead from Temple, a guy who had a ton of production, scored a lot of touchdowns this year, and then that's intriguing. But he is more of a power guy. I mean, he's a hard, physical runner, and so he's not so much a vision and make you miss type player that Matt Nagy described. He's much more of a downhill locomotive type, run over you, run through you type runner. Not really used that much in the passing game, although I thought he was a pretty capable pass protector. So, you know, give him some credit there. But I guess I don't know how much of an upgrade over the likes of Jordan Howard he gives you. Not that they're quite the same style, but, you know, as far as guys that they catch it when you throw it to them in the passing game, and we'll get more on that in a minute on Howard. But I don't know, Ryquell Armstead, just younger power back, not, it just doesn't scream Matt Nagy running back to me. And then last is Mike Weber from Ohio State. Kind of fell into a backup role there behind J.K. Dobbins. He's got decent vision. You know, he can make guys miss. He was up there with some of the better guys in that regard. So give him some credit for some elusiveness, but not really all that effective in the passing game. You know, there's maybe some upside there that was a little bit untapped. They tried to do a few different things with him and get him involved in different ways in the passing game, but I guess I'm just not sure he's this every down lead running back. He's more of a rotational guy there. He seems fairly smart, even though the vision is closer to average than above average. But he just kind of does a little bit of everything well, but not a lot super great, if that makes sense. So as a late round prospect, I think he could be somewhat of a fit. And again, you're still projecting a little bit in the passing game, but I don't know. Mike Weber just, I don't know if underachieving is the right word or underwhelming, but, you know, at 5'9", 215, he's not the biggest, the fastest, the most explosive, the most dynamic, the most elusive, the best vision, the best receiver. It's all just kind of a little bit of eh on everything. And so that's why late round maybe, but I'm not getting my hopes up about Mike Weber really being this diamond in the rough or this perfect fit in Matt Nagy's offense. So you can see out of these six, we've got a couple of guys that seem like these solid fits for what Matt Nagy wants to do, and you can see why they want to bring them in and really check off all the boxes. And then the other half of the guys are guys that don't really stand out as fitting the description Matt Nagy gave about vision, making guys miss, and being a hybrid, multi-dimensional running back. So then you can kind of flip it on the other side and say, well, the Bears want to bring them in and say, okay, you know, are you capable of more than what we saw on tape in college? And can we identify that in a workout? So Bears are doing their homework on the running back position. I've been warning you all offseason long. I'm sure that they're going to draft one at some point, just because if you're following best player available, there are so many good running backs in this draft. It just seems like at some point for one of their picks, a running back will be the best player available. And that's going to really put even more writing on the wall for Jordan Howard, a guy who I think is the victim of too much groupthink and following narratives, and people kind of missed the point on Jordan Howard. So up next, I've got a little bit of what I think will turn into somewhat of a rant about how Jordan Howard is perceived and what I see as being more actually the truth about Jordan Howard and his deficiencies. Keep it locked right here on Locked On Bears. So I have an article out today on Bears Wire entitled Jordan Howard is actually a capable receiver and third down back. And since we're talking about running backs today and potentially Jordan Howard replacements, I wanted to use this as an opportunity to flesh that out a little bit and sort of explain in audio form what I see out of Jordan Howard, what I see the issue is, and how perception and the discussion about him just doesn't sit quite right and doesn't seem to quite add up. Obviously, when you talk about Jordan Howard, the first point is always, well, he's not that effective in the passing game. You know, the Bears, quote-unquote, need a better receiver out of the backfield that would be a better fit for what Matt Nagy wants to do there. And what I'm challenging is how true that actually is. I'm not trying to come out and say Jordan Howard is the dynamic receiving weapon the Bears have been missing. Obviously, he's not an elite receiver, but I do think he has proven to be a capable receiver and a player who can contribute on third downs and help your offense on every down. I mean, you look at the Jordan Howard stats, that's where everybody goes first. I'm getting real tired of people pointing to regular statistics to make an argument, especially when what you see on tape can contrast that pretty drastically. The statistics, especially traditional statistics, I think are a supplement to a tape-based argument. You could say, here's the tape, and here are the statistics that kind of reflect that. But you have to look at the why behind the numbers. Why behind the 20 catches for 145 yards and no touchdowns Jordan Howard had as a receiver. Now, the first why, I think, for those numbers is the 26 targets. He was only targeted 26 times. He caught 20 of them, did not drop a pass, according to Pro Football Focus, and averaged 7.3 yards per reception. That's not bad. I mean, the at least the average there. 20 catches for 145 yards is not good, but you're only looking at 20 opportunities to catch the ball and do something with it. And so you might say, okay, well, the Bears just didn't throw him the ball that much because he's not a good receiver. And we get into a little bit of a chicken and an egg thing. But I think this season and the lack of receiving production for Jordan Howard was more about a lack of opportunities and the type of opportunities that he did have. You look at his 26 targets, half of those came over the first 5 weeks of the season. I think he had 11 in the first three games total. So early on, they were chucking the ball to him. He caught every single one in the first three games, and every single target was accurate, I should add, and he was able to catch all of those and be a capable receiver in the first three games before his targets kind of went away, and so did the production. But again, I don't believe this is the chicken and the egg. Well, he didn't get targets because he's not an effective receiver, because I look at what he did with the receptions he did make and the targets he did receive. And as far as a guy making plays after the catch, Jordan Howard averaged 7.1 yards after the catch per reception. So every time he caught the ball, he gained an average of 7.1 yards after the catch. For comparison, Tariq Cohen averaged 7.6 yards after catch per reception. So you're talking about a 0.5 yard difference per catch between Tariq Cohen, who's perceived as this elite receiving running back, perhaps accurately, and Jordan Howard, who is perceived as a non-factor in the passing game. And I think what really sold this on me when you're comparing these guys is when you isolate it to the screen passes. I think Jordan Howard had 6 screens he was thrown this year, and Cohen had quite a few more. Jordan Howard actually averaged more yards after catch per reception than Tariq Cohen on screen passes. Talk about Tariq Cohen, you get him in space, you let him make plays with the ball in his hands in space, that's a screen pass. You give Jordan Howard that same screen pass, on average, he's picking up more yards after the catch than Tariq Cohen. The big issue with Jordan Howard as a receiver this year was not his ability to catch the ball or his ability to make plays after the catch. The big issue was how he was used in the offense and where he was catching the ball. I think PFF has Jordan Howard with 226 route runs this season. That's routes, you know, any kind of passing play where he's running a route, so not including times he's in pass protection. I didn't sit and watch all 226 routes, but Pro Football Focus has some handy databases where you can go and look at every route a player ran. And I dug through all 226 of the routes Jordan Howard ran, and I found one where Jordan Howard ran a route that was vertical downfield. Out of the backfield. I think he ran about 4 routes from a wide receiver or tight end position, and those were all quick outs towards the sideline. But the other 225 routes are him running either towards the sideline or turning back towards the quarterback exclusively as a check down option. They're what you call either a pivot slash a circle route, where he comes out of the backfield anywhere from 0 to 5 yards downfield and turns like a curl and faces the quarterback and kind of waits for the check down, or it's the out or the flare or the swing routes where he just goes from the backfield up, you know, 2 to 3 yards and then breaks towards the sideline, again, as a check down option. I found one play all season where he ran a wheel route out of the backfield. It was against the Green Bay Packers. He was matched up with Clay Matthews. Trubisky throws incomplete to, I believe, Trey Burton, but Jordan Howard has a step or two on Clay Matthews and would have potentially been open for a vertical throw there. But the other 225 times, he is less than 5 or 6 or 7. I don't think I saw one more than 5, but don't quote me on that statistic specifically. Less than a handful of yards downfield. So he's always catching the ball, either facing the quarterback or working towards the sideline. So it's not setting him up to make big plays after the catch consistently. He still was able to average almost identical yards after the catch to Tariq Cohen, but he's not catching the ball very far downfield. That's the other key here. Jordan Howard's average depth of target this past season was 0.19 yards. He's essentially catching the ball at the line of scrimmage on average. That's how far downfield his passes are coming. So you look at the main difference between he and Tariq Cohen. If they have a similar yards after the catch, the biggest difference is the yards before the catch. Where are they catching their balls? Tariq Cohen was used as more of a downfield receiver. Obviously, Jordan Howard is not capable of lining up at wide receiver and running, you know, a double move up the sideline and beating a cornerback. No, that's not a fair comparison. But even when you're looking at how they're used out of the backfield, Tariq Cohen, more of those Texas routes where he's working up the seam, up the middle of the field a little bit more. It's not just wheel routes, but even swing routes where he's working up the sideline a little bit more and getting the ball moving vertically and getting it farther downfield. Even his out routes have a deeper stem to get downfield and make more yards before the catch rather than after. So that, to me, is the thing about Jordan Howard. I think Jordan Howard is a capable receiver. I should also mention, as a blocker, when you talk about being a third down back, I believe he was first among running backs in pass blocking efficiency, among running backs with a certain number of pass blocking snaps. I'll bring up the exact specific numbers here while I talk and stall at the same time, while I bring up the page on Pro Football Focus to look at their pass blocking efficiency screen. There's a little bit of a peek behind the curtain here as I talk and read at the same time. When you look at guys with, I want to say the cutoff number here is about like 25 or so pass blocking snaps. Jordan Howard, let's see, the cutoff here, 30. Anyone with 30 or more pass blocking snaps, Jordan Howard first in pass blocking efficiency. He only allowed two hurries on 79 pass blocking snaps on a per snap basis, allowing the least pressure as a pass blocker. So more than capable blocker on third downs. And as a receiver, he catches the ball every time it's thrown to him, and he gets open and can make extra yards after the catch, essentially equal to Tariq Cohen. So the issue becomes how he was used as a receiver. Now, obviously, the limitation with Jordan Howard is his speed and explosiveness, and that can limit how he is used as a receiver. I agree with that 100%. But the issue is not Jordan Howard's receiving ability, and that's the big point I want to make here. If the thing that holds Jordan Howard back is how fast he is, how explosive he is in the open field. Absolutely, 100%. And if the Bears want an upgrade in that area, I get it, totally. Jordan Howard is not so much the home run breakaway type threat, but he is a smart runner, a capable receiver, and one of the league's best pass blocking backs this past year. So I don't want the discussion to continue to be Jordan Howard is a bad receiver. Jordan Howard is a fine receiver. He's just not an explosive athlete. Matt Nagy might prefer a more explosive athlete, but did you notice in the way Matt Nagy described the running back position earlier in this podcast episode, vision making guys miss and being not one-dimensional? I think we established Jordan Howard is not one-dimensional. He can catch the ball. He's at one speed, but not one-dimensional. He can run and receive. He's got very, very good vision. Jordan Howard is elite in zone runs, being able to feel the gaps and hit the hole. And then as far as making guys miss, maybe that's where you come to the explosiveness and the lack of speed. His missed tackle numbers this past season, I think, were about career lows. And that is what you need better from Jordan Howard individually. He needs to be able to make guys miss and extend plays a little bit more. But he's a physical runner, a smart runner. He runs hard. He's great in pass protection. He catches everything thrown his way. And he did exactly what he was asked of as a receiver. And I'm not going to hold that against him. Hold the speed against him. Hold the explosiveness against him. Do not hold his receiving ability against him. Whew. Rant number one over. But still to come on the podcast, rant number two. The Bryce Callahan contract details came out last week. And I think when you compare him to Buster Skrine, I really am raising some question marks here as to the Bears' process in free agency and how I think they came away not with the best outcome at the slot cornerback position. I'll explain more next on Locked On Bears. I know the Bryce Callahan free agent situation has kind of come and passed, but it just hasn't been sitting with me quite right how that all went down. And, you know, I tweeted about it a little bit last week, and Greg Gabriel, the former Bears college scouting director, disagreed with me, and so that kind of made it sit with me a little bit worse now. And I need to hammer this point home about how I think the Chicago Bears missed out here on the Bryce Callahan situation, that they were a little bit too eager to sign Buster Skrine and move on from Bryce Callahan, and maybe didn't wait out this slot cornerback market enough just to see how Callahan's situation would play out. Because as it stands at the end, with some hindsight, I think the Bears ended up with the worst deal and the worst slot cornerback situation. Now, obviously, on the outside here, we don't know all the details of what the Chicago Bears did, what Bryce Callahan and his agent did, what the Denver Broncos did, who was having discussions, what those discussions were like, and what or how close or how much was actually discussed between these teams. So I understand that I can't sit here and say with 100% certainty, you know, X, Y, and Z did or didn't happen. But I look at the two contracts here, and I feel like the Bears ended up missing out on this Bryce Callahan deal. Because once the contract numbers came out, you know, originally it was reported 3 years, $21 million, and you're like, wow, Bryce Callahan got $7 million a year. Good for him. You know, that's pretty good money for a slot cornerback. Go ahead, go to the Broncos, get that money, and you know, go on with your life. But once you start getting the guaranteed money in there, and that's part of contract reading literacy, that's when you start to see what the value actually is here, and you see that the Broncos got a great deal for Bryce Callahan, and I'm surprised that, why wouldn't the Bears have just offered the same? If the Bears could have offered the same thing and gotten it, they should have. So I don't know whether the Bears did or didn't pursue this type of contract with Callahan, but my point is that they should. The Bears should have signed Bryce Callahan to the contract that he signed with the Denver Broncos rather than signing Buster Skrine to the contract they signed him. Whether that was possible or whether they were capable or whether there were other circumstances that take that away, I don't know. And I'm never going to know, but I want to make the point that I think the Callahan deal was the better deal. 3 years, $21 million, but only $10 million total guaranteed. And more specifically, $6.5 million guaranteed at signing. So Bryce Callahan gets a $4 million signing bonus, which is fully guaranteed from the day he starts. And then his first year's base salary is guaranteed. So that's the $6.5 million guaranteed to him right now. He will be paid $6.5 million this year, no matter what happens. And good for him. Beyond that, that is the only thing the Denver Broncos are locked into. Essentially, it is a one-year, $6.5 million contract with 2 years of team options. You get to next March, and he has a roster bonus for 2020 that becomes guaranteed, which brings up the total guaranteed to $10 million, as the contract says, but that is not guaranteed right now. So if he goes through the 2019 season, tears his ACL, or just is bad for some reason, the Denver Broncos can cut him after 2019 and have about $2.5 million of dead cap space and save about $6 million based on the salary that he would still be due in the future. Now, once you get to March of next year, then that roster bonus kicks in and you have another chunk of money guaranteed and you're locked into him for 2020 at that point. But you can decide before 2020 whether you want to bring him back and allow that money to be guaranteed. And then after that year, you only have $1.3 million guaranteed in 2021. So after 2 years, you can then again decide whether or not you want to bring Bryce Callahan back. So what it does is it gives the Denver Broncos injury insurance for a slot cornerback that the only knock on Bryce Callahan is his injuries. He is one of the best slot cornerbacks in coverage. He's very good in run defense, one of the elite blitzers off the edge as far as getting home to the quarterback. The only thing is staying healthy. And this contract pays him a fair wage if he stays healthy and gives the Broncos a lot of protection if he doesn't. Even those roster bonuses in 2020 are earned by per-game active bonuses. So he only gets paid those roster bonuses for each game that he's healthy. So they even built in extra protection, even if they keep him beyond that first year. So it's really a genius contract for the Denver Broncos. And I think if you're the Chicago Bears, it would have been a genius contract for them, especially because you have Sherrick McManus under contract still. And so that was kind of the debate, right? It's like, do the Bears even need to bring in a big free agent? Is Sherrick McManus just good enough to take over that slot role? Obviously, the Bears thought no. I kind of agreed with that. I don't trust Sherrick McManus in that full-time slot cornerback position. But if you pair that again with Bryce Callahan, specifically on the contract Bryce Callahan signed with the Denver Broncos, because if you go into 2019 with Callahan and McManus. Again, Callahan basically in that contract operating on a one-year, $6.5 million contract. It's basically a one-year prove-it deal then, and you can go to 2020 and either release him or bring him back on the contract, and you have Sherrick McManus. So if you sign Callahan to that deal, he gets injured and plays six games, you have Sherrick McManus, and you can feel a little bit more comfortable about having a backup plan there. You pay Bryce Callahan the $6.5 million. You know, he's a 27-year-old cornerback in his prime. He's going to get that on the market, and then you let him go. And you have no lingering salary cap penalty. And you say, okay, he still can't stay healthy. We'll move on. We'll find a slot cornerback replacement next year. But instead, you'd have that continuity. You'd have the injury protection in the contract. And you'd have the injury protection in Sherrick McManus if that injury were to happen. Instead, the Bears rush out of the gate and sign Buster Skrin. I applauded Ryan Pace for being aggressive still and identifying players that he wanted and making sure he goes out and gets them, even though his salary cap was limited. So I applaud that. I just don't know if I applaud Buster Skrin specifically being the guy. It's no secret on this podcast, not a big fan of what I see from Buster Skrin on tape. And I think his contract is worse than what the Broncos gave Bryce Callahan. With Buster Skrin, he is guaranteed $8.5 million, and all of that is automatically guaranteed on day one. His entire 2019 season is fully guaranteed, and they've already automatically guaranteed about half of his salary for 2020, for next year. So while Bryce Callahan is more of a one-year $6.5 million deal with two team options, Buster Skrin's is much more like a two-year $8.5 million deal with a third-year team option. The Bears aren't totally locked into Skrin for 2020, but they would only save about $2 million if they released him. It's not the end of the world if they had to, but it's not great for your finances if you have to leave about $5 million still on the salary cap after you work to cut him. So to me, both Buster Skrin, you're getting a significantly worse player on a contract that is harder for your team to get out of. Yes, Buster Skrin is a much more durable player. He has not missed a lot of games in his career, and give him all the credit in the world for that. But I think it's a significant downgrade from Callahan. It's a worse financial contract situation, and you had the protections built in for Bryce Callahan. I really think that screams missed opportunity for the Chicago Bears in one way, shape, or form. Like I said at the beginning, I don't know if they had that opportunity, but as we see the results, it makes me wonder if maybe they were too hasty to sign Buster Skrin. If they let it play out, maybe Callahan initially thought he was going to get more, had to settle for the Broncos deal. The Bears weren't there to take him on a settled deal because they had already signed Skrin. Whatever the reason, I think the Bears came out a little bit behind rather than coming out ahead on this one. I think Skrin's got the potential to be more like the Ryan Pace free agents that don't pan out rather than the Ryan Pace free agents that do pan out. But hey, I'm going to give him every chance. I'm going to evaluate the tape that he puts on the field in Chicago. I will tell you if Buster Skrin plays well. I will tell you if Buster Skrin plays poorly. And I'm not going to allow my previous opinion of Buster Skrin to shape that. It's, for me, it's not about being right about Buster Skrin. It's not about, you know, when he tapes the field, me trying to convince you that I was right about him being a poor slot cornerback. To me, it's more important to be right about what is happening on the field for the Chicago Bears. Whether that means Buster Skrin is playing well or playing poorly, I want to be right about what I am seeing on the field in Chicago. Whether that it agrees with or disagrees with my previous opinions and judgments on players, I strive to be the most accurate I can be about the players that we see on the field, and I try not to let my previous opinions of players shape my present opinions of players. But I'm just keeping it real with you. That's how I do it here on the podcast. If you enjoy these discussions and these rants a little bit today, I don't do a lot of real ranting, but between Jordan Howard and Bryce Callahan, just had to get it off my chest to kick off your week. If you enjoyed it and want to come back for more Mock Draft Monday analysis as well, make sure you subscribe on whatever podcast app you use. If it gives you the ability to rate and leave a review, those really help us move up the rankings as well and let more people reach us and join in on the Bears talk every single day. I've got some interesting podcasts lined up for you this week. Still finalizing the the guest interview time, so I can't tease too much, but we're going to talk a little bit analytics in terms of the Khalil Mack trade. I know that was a big thing, so we'll dive into some analytics details. We'll also talk, I think, a little bit of slot cornerback when it comes to analytics and maybe running back as well, and why the analytics are a little bit sour on the Chicago Bears' chances for 2019, but I'll push back on that a little bit and see if we can dig into the deeper reasons as well. So more of that coming this week, perhaps some special teams discussion about not only Pat O'Donnell and punters, but kickers in the draft as well, and kind of more bigger picture special teams talk as well. All of this kind of in the works. I can't confirm any specific guests or lock it in 100%, but I think there's plenty of exciting Bears talk coming your way this week. I hope you're ready for it. I hope wherever you live, whether it's in the Midwest like us or anywhere else, the weather's warming up for you a little bit more. Certainly is right around here, and I am enjoying it. Hope you're enjoying the podcast all off season long, and I hope it gives you a reason to bear down.